Yo, what is up? You have found We Like the Blazers. We are back, baby. I am Brandon Goldner. I have a bunch of fresh basketball cards from Back to the Basket on Hawthorne. Check them out. And with me, as always, as I'm hyperventilating, as I'm losing my breath, as my face is turning cherry tomato red, we have the one, the only, the Jenga Master. It's Ryan Whitledge. Ryan, what's up, man?
Not much. Yeah, I don't know if I only destroy my wife in a game of Jenga, does that qualify as Jenga Master? I feel as though like I'm supposed to go through a gauntlet of others.
You're both grown. Yes, it counts. Ryan attended Cassie's birthday party at Pips and Bounce, which is somewhere you can go to play ping pong and do other fun stuff. It was super fun. And Ryan challenged his wife to a game of oversized Jenga, and Ryan was victorious. The last like four or five moves looked very precarious. So congratulations to you. I know that's probably been a highlight of your year.
That is how I try to live my life, via a bunch of moves that others view from the outside. And they're like, what is this crazy man doing? Why is he doing it? None of this makes sense. This is a bad idea.
His entire life is about to crumble.
Oh, hey, wait, it worked out. Okay, I have no clue how. I mean, hell, even, okay, so like, here's a quick little like side tangent. So the wife and I just got hit with a rather substantial surprise bill that technically wasn't a surprise. We knew it was coming, but we totally spaced on it and did not budget accordingly for it. And so we're going through a momentary freak out about like, OF, what the hell are we going to do on this? And just so happens, then I randomly came across and found excess money that I didn't know existed in the within about $100 of the amount of that bill.
Like the Seinfeld finds the $20 in the pocket after throwing it out the window situation, it all evens out for you.
Yeah. No, it's just like randomly I was looking something up, like as I'm trying to figure something else out money-wise, and come to discover that an old 401k from a job I had 15 years ago got transferred to a different brokerage account and had just been sitting there and maturing. Like, apparently when I closed it out, I accidentally left like $50 in it, and look at that. 15 years later, here's the couple grand to come up and cover that surprise bill. I had no clue it existed, and I would have never found it had I not been searching for long shot options for things to cover that. So, hey, yeah, I live my life in the immortal words of Vin Diesel, quarter mile at a time.
Well, that's the kind of maturation that we hope to see from young Scoot Henderson, but that's not where we're going to start. I'm doing good. I think it's hot out, by the way, going from the ice storm to 50 degrees. I walked to Back to the Basket, which again is a basketball Blazers related, actually more basketball focused store, which is awesome, by the way. And actually, quick sidebar, one of the people who worked there, his name is Keyshawn. He has a podcast. He said, well, do you want to come on my podcast? Or maybe I could come on yours sometime. So we exchanged numbers. So at some point we're going to have a guest. And so shout out to Keyshawn. You were awesome. I appreciate you. But I walked there.
Why don't we just like bring our stuff down to Back to the Basket, haul up in a back corner?
Could do. Yeah, actually, that's not a bad idea. Let's coordinate this off air. I actually like that idea, though, doing something in person. It's good to see the humans. It's good to walk around. It did take like, not insignificant amount of like kind of had to like inhale and like, I'm going to walk to this store and like get basketball cards because I want to before I go to the grocery store. And like, I don't know, just sometimes my social anxiety is a little, I don't know, but it was really fun. And so again, shout out to Keyshawn and everyone Back to the Basket. Anyway, it's hot outside. 50 degrees is hot when you've been sitting in 20 degree weather for a week. But yeah, things are good. The Blazers, where are the Blazers? We haven't recorded in so long. I'm going to give it to you, but let me just set the table really quick for where the Blazers are. It is January 27. Maybe I'll get this out today. Probably the Blazers sit at 13-32. That's good for fifth in Northwest Division. I don't know how useful that is. Let's click over to fifth worst in the league. The Detroit Pistons with 5 wins, and then Washington with 8, the Spurs with 9, the Hornets with 10, the Blazers with 13 wins. That's where we stand in January. I don't know, a couple weeks of the trade deadline. There's plenty to talk about. Ryan, where do you want to start?
Well, seeing as that, I believe this is our first actual recording of the season. We have not recorded a pod in like 3 months.
It's been a while. I mean, one of us did have to move from one country to another and did start a new job and then was on vacation. So it's, you know, people have been doing stuff, but yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, we are back in the same time zone.
That's nice. I actually like that.
Yeah.
It's also nice that it's winter there and it's winter here rather than it's like I'm sweating because it's, you know, 25 degrees Celsius. We're, you know, anyway, yeah, it's same time zone is good. Easier to coordinate.
So I wanted to start with, because we had a lot of opinions on how we thought the season would go. And so I wanted to get your take to start off with on the expectations versus reality for how the Blazers are, what you've seen. Also, you know, how much of it you've seen. I know a lot of people's watching habits and fandoms have changed. I know mine have personally. I actually, over the last week, I've watched 3 games. I think I need to stop because I'm not helping the tanking because they've won all 3. So
That's impressive. That's it's been hard for me to watch games, to be totally honest with you. So expectations versus reality. Look, I thought this team would be better than they are. What I thought was going to happen is I thought they'd be better than they are, and then they would trade people and then be worse. And I actually made a bet with Seth Morgan. You may know him as Sheriff of PDX. Awesome guy. Friend of the show and friend of real life. Bet him $100. The over under on that was, I can't even remember. It was 20 something.
28 and a half.
My money's gone. He won. Good job. Cause there's just no way. A couple things, expectations versus reality. One is I thought Scoot Henderson was going to be better than he is right off the bat, and he's not, and that's fine. But the other thing is I really thought that, I knew it was possible, but I didn't think that Robert Williams was going to have a season ending injury immediately. So that's part of it. Right. Cause when you think about Robert Williams, Malcolm Brogdon, Anthony Simons, Jeremy Grant, DeAndre Ayton, like those 5 people have a lot of NBA experience. Matisse Thybulle, they have a lot of NBA experience. They're not like green and they're all, you know, some version of good, like from, you know, decent backup player to like, you know, sub all-star somewhere on that scale. When you take that plus Shaedon Sharpe, plus Scoot Henderson, plus some other people, I mean, on paper, that sounds like a 30-something win team. So that's what I thought. I was wrong. Part of it is that Chauncey Billups is not a great coach. Part of it is that, you know, there's a lot of talent in the NBA. So while I'm a little surprised, I'm not ultra surprised. I just thought they'd be better than they are. What's your first take?
They're actually a little better than I thought they would be.
Really?
In
what ways?
Record-wise?
Really?
I thought that they would struggle to get to 20 wins. And so we're just a smidge over the halfway mark of the season. I think they could find 7 more wins. So they're in some degree, they're a little better than I thought they would be.
Wait a minute. This is going to sound weird because you're looking pretty right. I want to take us back to October and remind me what your thinking was about that. Because again, what I just said, Ryan, I rattled off a bunch of like decent NBA players plus some others. And you thought they were going to struggle to 20 wins. Help me understand, even though it looks like you're going to end up being right.
So part of it is that I did not think a lot of the vets were very long for the team. Malcolm Brogdon has already exceeded my expectations for how long he would be a Portland Trailblazer. Robert Williams as well, but obviously the injury plays a part of that. Matisse Thybulle, I thought that he would probably, you know, he'd be a deadline deal kind of thing. But I thought for sure they were very much going to lean into the Ant, Scoot, and Sharp, all 3 of them being the starters. Ant being the most experienced of those 3. And something I had mentioned to you a little while ago is that how I view Scoot's season and how I view Ant's season, it colored my expectations a little more. I viewed this as, you know, the IMG Academy, or no, the G League Ignite. A lot of G League teams, they tend to act as showcase leagues, for lack of a better term. You know, they're a little bit developmental, you know, when teams are running them themselves. But, you know, when you get a player like Scoot, when he was down there, it was very much a just showcase Scoot kind of thing. And he was able to thrive when he was the showcase player, and it was a very me. Get it? And so, but I view like that's not comparable to me to like a college basketball experience. So this year for me is like Scoot's first year of college basketball. And in that regard, because Sharp played, you know, limited for a while last year, and then a little more as the season went on, we're now in Shaedon Sharpe's quote unquote first year of NBA basketball. So I didn't have such high expectations for Scoot as I think a lot of people did. Kudos to Danny Morang for trying to allow everyone to understand that there have been 24 teenage rookie point guards over the course of league history, and only three have ever outperformed. And by outperform, that's like having an average of 15-5. So that's kind of colored a bit of my expectations on it.
Okay, let's talk about Scoot for a second. Like, let's get real about this. You're watching him play like everyone else is. How are you feeling about him as a long-term prospect? And again, to your point, he's very young. He's had almost no experience at NBA adjacent basketball, right? So, And I think your point is well taken about that the G League Ignite is about showcasing individuals, and that the college game is more similar to the NBA than the G League Ignite is to the NBA. So obviously there was going to be some adjustment, but like, how are you feeling about Scoot Henderson as a long-term prospect, having seen him play for the last 30 some odd games?
I think he can get there. I think anybody who said, you know, after the Dame trade,
I think he can get there. I'm interrupting you, Ryan. That is not a hot take answer. That's not very clippable.
Well, if you want my hot take,
I don't hear the conviction in your opinion.
I think he can get there, but it's going to take him 4 to 5 years to get there.
I love you. I'm going to need like a stronger opinion than that. I think he can get, what do you think about him? Do you think that he is what the Blazers thought he was when they drafted him?
He will be a borderline all-star point guard.
And what did you think he was going to be when they drafted him?
A borderline all-star point guard.
Weird. Okay. So you never saw the superstar upside then.
I did not see the superstar upside.
We're going to have to go back and listen to when we recorded last. I don't remember you having that take, but sure. I guess I can't really fact check you at the moment.
I thought the talk of him being an absolute generational talent was a little overblown. A big part of it was because of his, you know, lack of a shot, you know, his athleticism,
which you can develop.
Correct. You can develop. It's going to take some time. His footwork's a little bit of a mess from what I've seen, or from watching it. That definitely needs some work. There's a lot of stuff that I think that after this season, he has, for one, now the money to go pay to work on it. And for two, the time over the summer to completely break down parts of his game. His strength is in his athleticism. He needs to work on his decision-making. That will come with game reps and time, so he can figure out how to use that athleticism and that ability to get to the rim to his benefit, to draw fouls. He needs to back off a little bit on forcing some of these passes and trying to kind of set up teammates. I mean, we saw a game here I think in the last week where in the first five possessions, he had 3 to 4 turnovers, you know, and some of that is like, is when he's taking the mentality of like, oh, I'll get my teammates involved. Well, you have to do that, but there is a balance between forcing the issue and letting it come naturally. And I think he has the skills to be a very good rim running point guard that can set up his teammates. But because of that, because he lacks for right now and for the foreseeable future, a decent outside shot, and to the point that teams don't even like, he can stand at the 3-point line all day. They don't care. It's going to be hard for him to break any sort of all-star voting balance. So that's why I say, you know, future borderline all-star. The other thing too, is that where his benefit would have come in going to college is I think he wouldn't have had as high of a profile if he had went to college for his first year. I think a few more of these flaws that we're seeing now would have been exposed, and he may have ended up being a 2-year college player or a 3-year college player. It would have polished his game a little more. So because of that, I'm not expecting him to actually truly get to a point where I'm expecting high things from him or his ability to lead a team kind of thing until year 2 or 3. So that's why I'm saying, you know, by year 5, he could be a borderline NBA all-star. The other thing is that the team needs to shit or get off the pot and decide what the hell they're going to do with Anfernee Simons. Is this Ant's team? Is this Scoot's team? Until they can make that decision, it's going to hinder development to some degree. But I don't think that the Blazers can afford to have a team with all three of them, with Scoot, Sharp, and Simons.
Yes, the Blazers can't afford to have Scoot, Sharp, and Simons. Let's pin
literally
that and come back
and
to
figuratively.
It. Totally.
They will all be expensive one day.
Let's talk about that in a second, but I want to go back to Scoot Henderson. And again, I'm just going to press this point that, like, you thought when he was drafted that his upside was maybe an all-star. That's not what I thought. Like, when he was drafted, I saw the superstar potential. Like, I wasn't the only one. Plenty of people who know him better than me.
What about it? What about what you saw from his game led you to see superstar potential?
Mostly, to be honest, mostly the athleticism, right? Like, it's mostly the athleticism. And he does.
Because you can't teach athleticism.
Everything you can't teach you athleticism. To a lesser extent, his work ethic and attitude, like, it does early returns early returns suggest that he does have the right attitude, the right work ethic. He's in incredible shape. Athletically, he looks completely fine. I also think, like, part of before he was drafted, like, you saw a little bit of the vision, of the passing vision that I think you've seen more of now at the NBA level. Obviously, his shot was going to be a work in progress, and that's the biggest thing. I didn't know that he would be so turnover happy. In fact, as I'm looking through, he has one game this entire season where he has zero turnovers. Can you guess which game that was? That just happened that he left 6 minutes into the game.
Night's game?
Correct. That's the first game that he hasn't had a turnover. So that's not great. But, like, the point I'm trying to make, and you can clip this, is that I feel not as good about him as when he was drafted. I thought that he had superstar potential. Now, I mean, okay, like, it seems still possible because, yes, like, he plays the NBA game more. He understands the pace more. He turns the ball over less. Like, some of the passes he's trying to make, they start connecting, or maybe he kind of self-selects in his own mind out of attempting them altogether. And his shot comes along. Combine that with the athleticism, and yes, you've got a stew going. But, like, yeah, like, I'm not going to sit here and say I'm not, like, a little bit disappointed in what I've seen so far, even though we all knew that he was going to be a project because he's so young. So I don't know. Like, I mean, is it too early to say that the Blazers made a mistake, quote unquote, picking him? I also agree with you that, like, we really aren't going to know for years. And then we're also really not going to know until the Blazers clarify the team around him. Mm-hmm. Because again, like, I think this is what you were saying. The team around Scoot Henderson right now is not ideal for him to develop and succeed. Although, you did mention something. I can't remember if you mentioned it before we started recording or if it was during recording about, Scoot Henderson would have benefited from playing behind someone like Damian Lillard. And yeah. My question back was, like, well, what about playing behind someone like Anfernee Simons? Like, why in your mind is that not, like, I mean, Anfernee Simons is not the player Damian Lillard is and was, but
I can touch on this in two hot button topics. For one, watching this team right now, I remember advocating that I believed that this team could field all of Damian Lillard, Anfernee Simons, and Scoot Henderson and Shaedon Sharpe. And the clear divide there was Dame and Ant are your starters, and Scoot and Shaedon are coming off your bench. And I remember being told numerous
Sharpe
times,
play center, let's go.
And I remember being told constantly by many people, you can't have the number three draft pick coming off the bench? And I always ask why. Where's Scoot Henderson primarily playing now? He's not starting most games. He's primarily kind of coming off the bench, and those tend to be his better games.
Oh, I want to push back on that really quick. The stats don't necessarily bear that out. He does shoot better off the bench, but it's not this like massive dramatic change. Just so everyone knows, I did write a very brief prompt for Blazers Edge, where you can find my writing, by the way, at blazersedge.com, where the question to readers was, should he be coming off the bench? And to prompt that question, I did look into his splits starting off the bench. They're really not that different. Again, his shooting is slightly better coming off the bench, but there's not this like chasm between his bench and starting production. Just want to fact check you. In fact, his last five games off the bench, he's only shooting 37% and 18% from three. So
I will say some of that data does have to be a little skewed, because a lot of his starting too happened when Anfernee Simons was injured. And so you're taking Ant completely out of the mix and his shot creating ability if he ends up being alongside, but whatever. But
one more diversion really quick. Why is it? I can't remember why the last game he started, he went for 33-7-9 with three steals, and the next game he came off the bench. I don't remember why that happened. Is that because
the efficiency? He did that on 31 or 32 shots.
But let the man run. Like, I mean, I don't know. Like, this is like, part of me is like, and maybe this gets into something we're going to talk about in a second. I interrupted you. Sorry, I'll pin that myself. What were you going to say? Sorry.
It's all right, because I think it's something else that we'll touch on. And in my theory of what Chauncey Billups was...
I'll give you a free ice cream for interrupting you from the Rip City remix.
But my theory of what Chauncey Billups kind of did to start the season that got him in a little bit of hot water. But anyways, no, I think... that if Scoot, you know, he eventually ended up to this coming off the bench, that's where, as long as Brogdon's on the team, I would have much rather him be coming off the bench and learning from someone like Damian Lillard. Totally understandable why Dame, at this point in his career and with everything he had been through with the organization, why he wasn't willing to take on that mentorship role, why he wanted to go to a team like the Milwaukee Bucks that he always wanted to go to from day one. He never even considered that awkward team down in Miami. But by the way, that thinking about that whole thing makes me all the much more angry that like a CJ trigger wasn't pulled years before. I can get down a whole rabbit hole on that, but you know, I feel, you know, if somehow the Blazers would have ended up with Scoot in a world where Dame wasn't pissed, I think this team could be good and decent and playoff worthy, but whatever. As far as for why I don't think Scoot can learn this from Ant, well, not that he can't learn it from Ant. It's just not as beneficial for him to learn it from Ant. It's because, and caution, trigger word here. Ant's not an alpha. I'll say it. Ryan. I love the damn discourse.
Son of a gun.
I think everybody has a massively flawed definition.
Ant's not an alpha. Ant just dropped 40 points and 10 dimes on good efficiency. He's not an alpha. He had a game-winning shot. He's not an alpha.
What? Let me ask you
this.
I'm
a Chauncey Billups defender. I'm Ryan Whitledge. He's not an alpha.
That is my reputation. What is the definition of an alpha in sports to you?
Somebody who's willing to take over, I think, is like a short way to put it, right? Like willing to take the hard shot, willing to take a last shot, is basically willing to have their stamp on the game when they decide. Why does Anfernee Simons not fit that mold?
Because you think he's getting
33 points and 40 points and 38 points by just like existing and like,
no, I think he's getting that by being a top tier scorer and just a walking bucket. But being that does not mean that you're an alpha. To me, being an alpha is that driving force of that team. You are like that Kobe Bryant Mamba mentality of, this is my team. We're doing this. You know, with that does come like a lot of that hard-headed nature. Like, for lack of a better term, being an alpha to some degree requires being a bit of an asshole. It doesn't just because you're the team's best scorer doesn't mean you're the alpha of the team.
Wait, hold on. Like, let's be clear.
If I had to pick who the alpha of the Trailblazers team is currently, right now, I'm probably looking at like a freaking Jabari Walker or Malcolm Brogdon.
So let me be clear. The reason why we're talking about this is because back in late December, Chauncey Billups said, quote, on the offensive side, you want to start games and get the ball moving. We don't have an alpha type dude on our team.
Correct.
What he's saying in context, so we're not taking his words out of context. He's saying that we don't have someone who you can just feed the ball to and for them to generate offense. He's wrong. Anthony Simons is that kind of player. That's exactly the kind of player he is. He's not talking about Mamba mentality. I'm the leader of the team. That was not the context of the quote. You are wrong. You can apologize to me in any form that you want.
Where did you get the context?
Credit card payments. I'll accept money orders, cash on delivery.
I'll CODs. Give you a fucking ice cream cone. You keep your coupon.
Yeah, give me a fucking ice cream cone. So, like, look, I'm just saying that, like,
where do you get that context? What did you invent the context?
I got that context from a little site called BlazersEdge.com. Ever heard of it? No, this is from his quote, from Chauncey Billups' quote.
Correct.
Which, by the way, is when Anthony Simons came off a season-high 41 points. And he says that we don't have an alpha. Again, the context of the quote was, okay, more context, okay? So, here, a little bit longer quote. This will confirm that I'm correct and you're wrong. Quote from Billups, quote, we don't have an alpha type dude on our team. It just is what it is. We've got some hell of a players, guys that are going to be all-stars in this league. But right now we don't have that dude that you can throw it to and he'll get us going for the first 4 or 5 minutes of the game. Mm-hmm. We just don't have that. So we've got to do it collectively. End quote. He's wrong. That person is Anthony Simons. You can do that. He's not talking about the leader, the emotional heart and soul of the team. That's not what Billups is talking about.
It could not be more correct. Ant is not the one to get you going. Ant can get you points, but he's not going to get the team going. Just by Ant scoring getting the team going.
What are you talking about?
How is Ant scoring getting DeAndre Ayton more motivated and involved and getting him going in the game? He's talking about the kind of stuff that we used to see from Dame, where Dame would take the first quarter to make sure his teammates were fed and make sure his teammates were comfortable and warmed up and in service of a game.
Anthony Simons goes for 38 and 11 assists or for 40 points and 10 assists.
Score.
Or for 41 points and 7 assists, or 23 points and 7 assists, or 24 points and 7 assists. Are you listening to this? This isn't just about him scoring. This is about him creating offense for others. By the way, like, look at the last game where he's been playing a lot of minutes, plays 40 minutes, again goes for 40 with Ryan, 10 assists. You know what an assist is? An assist is when I give you the ball and you make it. So that's not me scoring. So I'm pushing back on this really hard. I'm upset. No, my blood pressure is through the roof. I don't understand how
cheeks are a little rosy. Because an elite scorer, a walking bucket is not an alpha to me. If you want me to back this up with an even hotter take that you can clip,
is your back hurt from moving these goalposts? Because you just said get the rest of the team going. That's what assists are.
Correct. And Anthony Simons, if you look up his numbers from last night, has most of his assists in the third quarter after he finished the first half.
That's how averages work.
No. He had most of them in the third quarter. When
he's averaging five assists on the year. That's not nothing. That's quite a bit.
He had double his
career averages. Like, I don't know, man.
I want the mute button for you. He had 22 points in the first quarter, and then when the Spurs came out of the half, they attempted to take him out of it. His gravity, yes, affected it, and then he was able to get more passing going. By the way, he started getting his teammates involved in the fucking third quarter. That is not an alpha that can get the team going right from the beginning.
So you're saying that the difference between Anthony Simons and Damian Lillard is the 1.7 assist difference between the two players this year. That 1.7 assist per game, the alpha difference right there.
I'm not going to argue anything alpha wise with a freaking stat sheet because it takes everything out of context. It's a leadership. It's a driving factor of it all.
That wasn't the context of what Billups is saying. Like, you're right in that. Like, if the definition of alpha includes like leading the team as an emotional leader, you're right. But that was not the context.
An emotional leader, a a driver of the team,
Folks, he's speechless because he's so wrong and he's crumbling under the weight of my being right.
Question for you. Was Carmelo Anthony an alpha?
That's such an interesting question.
Because he was a walking bucket.
He didn't pass. Average more than 3 assists a game in his whole career?
He was a walking bucket. He had that, you know, that somewhat of that mentality. But I don't think he was an alpha. And I'm not going to lie.
How many assists did Carmelo Anthony average during his career?
-7, if I'm not mistaken.
Less than 3.
That's why I said -7.
Okay. Yes. So, okay.
But alpha is not just assist numbers. I'm not just talking about he got his teammates involved.
He gets himself going and he gets the team going. That's what Billups is talking about when he said we don't have an alpha. Billups is wrong because Simons is that player. Case closed.
Well, I am just trying to protect my media access with the franchise and not burn my relationships. So I am carrying the water for Chauncey Billups and defending his job. So
if you're a reporter, and I will not name names, but if you're a reporter and you come out with these long soliloquies about how the players are failing and this player is failing and that player is failing, and it's very interesting that you don't say anything critical about the coach, then maybe you don't want to piss off the listen, that's part of the game of being a reporter, is that you don't want to burn your bridges. And we're gonna leave that aside. Let me end with this on this argument. You are right about
and cut.
If you're talking about the leader of a franchise, someone who embodies something bigger than just the game and, you know, culturally, and yes, then someone like Damian Lillard is different than someone like Anthony Simons, different from. So,
and that is the context that I believe that Chauncey said that from.
It's not because I just read it to you, but fine. But look, and also interesting, and maybe a quick pivot to Dame, if we don't mind. I think it's interesting that like Damian Lillard, that kind of alpha-ness, that leaderness, he definitely does not have that in Milwaukee. Like, it doesn't mean he's not successful. By the way, congratulations, Damian Lillard, all-star starter for the first time in his career. Well-deserved, should have been a starter several other times.
Ironically, while Steph Curry did not get voted in the West.
The West just has more better guards, and that's literally the only difference. Not like Damian Lillard has changed.
73 in fact, he's having, last night.
Yeah. So, you know, congrats to Dame. It's interesting he's in that situation. That situation, quote unquote, being that the Bucks just fired their coach when they were, what's their record? Like, it was like at that point, like 30-13. They were among the top teams in the league, and they had just hired Adrian Griffin. And as we remember, Terry Stotts was the lead assistant on that Bucks team for like 2 weeks before there was an argument between Griffin and Stotts. Griffin got mad at
it. Need this.
Yeah, I mean, Adrian Griffin gets mad at Terry Stotts because Terry Stotts is trying to talk with Giannis and Dame, and Griffin's like, come over here. And Stotts is like, hey, I'm talking with these guys. And Griffin yelled at him. And Stotts is like, yeah, I don't need this. I'm going to, you know, watch a Timbers game and drink a beer and peace out. So Adrian Griffin fired Doc Rivers. Now the Bucks coach. I mean, so like, I don't know, like I'm a little worried, man, because I want Damian Lillard to win a title. I don't think Doc Rivers is winning a title in 2024. I just don't.
No, and I'm not going to lie. For anybody, and I've been on this bandwagon, but for anybody who said that, you know, Dame can play defense if he needs for those moments that he needs to, we're going to see, because Doc's going to freaking demand it. But oh my God. Like, I would take, if I could bet against the Bucks futures right now, I so totally would, because yeah. And also that Bucks pick that we got now looks a lot better down that road.
Is it 2029?
Well, that's kind of what you want. You're hoping that anybody who, like all these trades, I mean, it's always at this point, it's a quality over quantity. Like, I mean, heck, as we're looking at all the stuff that Toronto just, you know, fire sold, all those super expensive assets that just 6 months ago they said would, you know, take everybody's freaking mortgaging their future to get OG or get Pascal, and they just, you know, gave them away. The picks that they got, those aren't good picks at all, because they're too immediate. And you kind of need some of these teams to have their moment and then absolutely drop off. That 2029 Bucks pick is going to be freaking gold. And by the way, this 2024 Golden State pick is just delicious right
delicious.
Now.
But. No, I know. But really, a couple more things quickly on the Bucks, though, because look, they've become my second team. I don't follow them nearly as closely as the Blazers, but like, I'm a Dame loyalist, and you know, that is what it is.
What jersey are you wearing to the game?
So I was going to ask you, first of all, are you going? Second of all,
No, I'm
going to either wear, I was going to wear the Dame Team USA, but I think I do actually have to wear a Blazers Dame jersey. I don't know which one yet, so check back with me later. But I want to say really quick about the Bucks, and I do have a hot take. So Doc Rivers is also adding Dave Yeager, who was the former coach of the Grizzlies and the Kings, and Rex Kalamian, is that how you pronounce it? Who is an assistant with the Clippers. But here's my hot take. Doc Rivers is good at many of the things that make a good coach. There's a reason why he keeps getting jobs. Doc Rivers talked about a cultural leader when the Clippers were going through all the bullshit with their former owner. Like, Doc Rivers was incredible. Yeah. He's he's a very smart basketball mind, very good communicator, and people really respect him. I think that he's going to have a lot of respect, not just with the players, but with the organization. So having said that, in 2024, can Doc Rivers win a meaningful playoff series if he has the right staff around him and he allows his staff to maybe show some more autonomy? Then maybe. Like, I don't think Doc Rivers by himself is just a 2024 playoff winning coach, because he's proven again and again that he's not. So I'm a little concerned, but we'll see. I mean,
I don't trust what he can do with, you know, a big man or a generational big and, you know, an all-star level point guard, because we've seen him have that in the modern era over in the Sixers and didn't get anywhere. So
I would be interested to see maybe. I'd be interested to see what Doc Rivers as a coach would look like with this year's version of the 76ers and not the one that was dealing with the Harden stuff, but leaving that aside. Okay.
I would have loved if Terry stuck it out. And then after all that bullshit, like if Terry would have just kind of like sat back and then Griffin gets fired and then Stotts becomes the coach of the Bucks, head coach of the Bucks again for the second time in his career. Well, and then him and Dame go and win a title. I would have loved it.
That would have been amazing.
All of
to
the
be
Terry
fair,
beer gifts.
I do think that, like, I think it was pretty obvious that part of the reason why Griffin's not there anymore is because Stotts left. So, I mean, and by the way,
yeah,
like,
it doesn't sound like he had much, that Griffin had much respect from the players. Like,
credit to the Bucks organization. So tell me if this story sounds familiar to you, Ryan. You bring
are you going to use it?
You bring in a first time head coach into a team that you want to elevate into contention, and that coach almost immediately underperforms. Team A says, that's fine, we'll keep rolling with it. Team B says, fuck that, we want to win a title, goodbye. The Blazers could have, would have, should have gotten rid of Billups so long ago. He's
Bill,
he was
your
the
hypothetical Neil was still going through puberty.
Man,
if there was a competent GM at the head, yes, the Blazers probably would have pulled the trigger on Chauncey Billups. Then a competent GM would have went to ownership and just been like, hey, swallow the $20 million, whatever, just deal with it.
Swallow the pride. Look, the other dynamic that was so similar in this was that, why was Adrian Griffin the coach and why was Chauncey Billups the coach? The same reason in both cases, that team's best player wanted that person as the coach. The difference is the organization, the Bucks, they had the confidence and, you know, the strength, I suppose, to say, we're getting rid of him anyway, and we're going to hire somebody who we think is the best coach. And again, I don't think Doc is, but whatever. Mm-hmm. And the Blazers couldn't do it. I don't know, but like, yeah. So
aren't gonna do it this season.
And all this shit about, like, well, Chauncey Billups hasn't gotten a fair shake. Have you heard even one person in the NBA community saying, well, geez, Adrian Griffin didn't get a fair shake? Has anyone said that? I think maybe Magic Johnson might have said something, but I don't trust his opinion on anything basketball related, really. Whatever. Anyway, a good coach, not a good executive, but like, but Chauncey Billups deserves 1,000 chances and Adrian Griffin, it's fine that he doesn't. Like, again, like I just, yeah.
If you don't mind, I'm for the first time ever, I'm going to speak up in slight defense of Chauncey Billups here. I mean, breaking news.
Wow.
No, the one thing that
my internet connection's going bad.
So for one, going back to the beginning of the year, my impression of Chauncey Billups, I do agree. He's not the long-term coach of this team. It's going to do the team absolutely no good to, if they fire him midseason, because if they fire him midseason, they're not going to hire anybody else. Scott Brooks is just going to get elevated. So you're not going to see like this major shakeup and change. But my theory of like what he did at the beginning of the year is somewhat of that. He just rolled the frickin' ball out to see what everybody could do. Warts and all, like, here you go, just go play basketball, let's figure it out. That's why it looked so atrocious as it did. And I think he did that for a very long time, and now he's kind of back to attempting to do some fine tuning, partly so that the vets don't revolt. But the thing that I probably give him the most credit for out of his entire tenure here is that I feel as though after the 62 point loss that followed a 40 some point loss that followed like a 30 some point loss, that was the point in time that if this team was going to fracture, mail it in, all the vets say, fuck you, I'm done, break everybody's psyche, all that, just pack it up. It would have been the time after that 62 point loss. He's got some pull, some sway to the benefit of the players, especially the young players, to that motivated them to where they are playing better now. It's not pretty, it's not the best basketball they can play, but it's better than when they were absolutely getting their ass kicked. And whatever abilities he has as a, you know, player's coach, I believe he showed in not letting this team absolutely fracture after that 62 point game. I think that's the best coaching that he's shown in the entirety of his tenure. That's not me saying that he needs to stay the coach. I would fully be on board with after this season if they let him go. It wouldn't surprise me if a little bit behind the scenes, maybe there's some sort of, feelers out for coaching searches going on now. You know, another topic that I think Chris Mannix brought up is how long does Chauncey want to go through these shitty seasons and tarnish his record? I mean, if he wants to stay in coaching, he's got to at least start showing some winning. I don't think he's going to do it when we're in a 2 to 3 year rebuild. Now, I don't buy anybody's argument of we've been in the rebuild for the last 2 years. No, fuck you. This is year one.
If Chauncey Billups gets another head coaching job after this, it will have nothing to do with his record. And like, so it's kind of like, you know, and I,
do you agree with me? That I do. The locker room break on that.
I agree with you. And here's why. If we are going to sit here and shit on Chauncey Billups for a 62 point loss and say that was at least partially his fault and he's lost the team and they gave up, then you also have to at least partially credit him when they come back and they look, you know, highly competitive, and they should have won a game where the NBA completely messed up and didn't give him a timeout, and they, you know, they went into overtime and won that game. So yeah, I agree. And like, yes, credit to him for holding everything together. And yes, I will credit him for that. I need to wash the taste out of my mouth right now. I need some mouthwash.
We got some great audio cuts from you. God, just all of it. We need to send that to our social media team so they can cut all these and put them in.
Our social media team. Yeah, exactly. Yes. Our team of everyone that we have on staff. Let me ask you this though. The trade deadline's coming up. Okay. Mm-hmm. So coming up in a couple of weeks, you've heard chatter about Malcolm Brogdon. You've heard some reverse chatter about Jeremy Grant, i.e. the team doesn't really want to trade him.
I don't think Grant wants to leave either.
Yeah. I don't think we've heard anything about Anthony Simons. We've even heard some chatter about Robert Williams, which is a little surprising. So
and some Matisse Thybulle snippets.
Yeah,
here
some
and
Matisse
there,
Thybulle but... talk. Here's my question. Do you think it's better? So, by the way, we need to agree on the premise that the goal for this team has nothing to do with wins and losses and has everything to do with developing their young talent, right? Mm-hmm. So Do you think it's better for that goal? Do you think it's better for the development of the talent to either keep the vets, keep some NBA experience around them, some cohesion, they get to learn from them, or do you think it's better for the team to just totally pull the ripcord, become as bad as they possibly can, get more draft capital, and open up more playing time for the young players? Which do you think, in kind of the medium to long run, is a better team building move, to trade the vets or keep the vets?
You're going to need some vets. I think Jeremy Grant, it wouldn't surprise. I don't think he's anywhere on the block. I don't think he even wants to leave the team. He's a good salary to have. I mean, there's still always the argument that you need of like, hey, you need to pay somebody. Malcolm Brogdon, he deserves better than what Portland can offer. The thing is it's going to depend on the trade partner. Cause I do not imagine that the Blazers would not at least consult Brogdon about where they would be trading him. You know, he very much strikes me as that, you know, if he gets traded to another rebuilding team, he'd rather be like, no, I like the shitty team I'm on right now. I don't want to go to a different shitty team kind of thing. So I think they'll try to do right by him and trade him to a contender. With that does come, you know, you're hoping for a more longer term pick because it's coming from a contender. You want them on their collapsing end, not on their ascending end. So I think he's gone. I think that's the easiest one. Grant, like I said, I don't see him going anywhere. The funny thing, Matisse Thybulle was getting mentioned, but he was also getting mentioned with the Sixers. Before, or not the Sixers, the Bucks before, yep, the Doc Rivers news. And Matisse has basically a no trade clause, a right of first refusal because he was signed restricted free agent. It would take a miracle for him and Doc kind of repairing their relationship. You know, he's allowed more freedom and to shoot the basketball, and it worked out to his benefit, as opposed to where Doc said, don't touch the effing ball. You get that near the 3-point line, you pass it. I can't see them having a good reunion. So Matisse is interesting, but I think he likes it here as well. And so as far as vets are concerned, hold on real quick. Let me just finish this thought and then I'll kick it over to you. As far as vets are concerned, out of all of them on the team, the two that I think are the most beneficial to the development of the rookies, or the young guys, are Jeremy Grant and Matisse Thybulle. Everybody else, and I mean everybody whose name I did not say, don't care if they're shipped out.
I think that's fair.
There are two significant players in there whose names I did not say. And yes, one of them is very tall and lives in Vancouver.
Okay. I want a quick thing on the Thybulle talk, and his no trade clause and his relation to the Doc Rivers. Just because a player didn't have a great experience with the coach doesn't mean that they wouldn't want to go back to them. Again, like Doc Rivers being the kind of person he is, who commands the respect he does, like, would it shock me if they had a conversation and they were like, hey, sorry. Yeah, no, man, I'm sorry. Like, here's how I would use you if you came here. That wouldn't shock me. And like the Bucks are a title contending team. The Blazers are not. If Matisse Thybulle cares about contributing to a title contending team, then maybe he would want to go somewhere like the Bucks. So anyway, I wanted to point that out. With respect to, yeah, I agree with you that like, I kind of think Jeremy Grant, that it makes sense to me as the one person you'd want to keep around. And it's for one very simple reason. It's for positional scarcity, or the opposite, positional gluttony, I suppose, because you got Scoot Henderson and you got Shaedon Sharpe and they are both guards. And so it does make sense to, you know, if you see them both as, you know, starting level or all-star level players someday, to surround them with the kinds of players who would mimic a good NBA lineup around them. And that would not include someone like Anthony Simons. Now, with respect to DeAndre Ayton, here's the problem. It's when fan bases, I included, get to the point where you're like, I really want to trade this guy because he sucks. Well, guess what? No one else is going to want him. That's the problem. It's also the opposite. Once your player starts playing really well, like Miami Heat fans, who I want to make fun of so badly, we wouldn't trade Jaime Jaquez for anybody. Well, the second that you start saying that someone is really good, that means their trade value is high. That is when mm-hmm. you would trade them because you can trade them. So, yeah, I don't know.
The one benefit I think to the DeAndre Ayton discourse is that when he was in Phoenix, they needed to get rid of him because he was viewed as a malcontent. And I don't think he has that or is portraying that reputation here in Portland. In Portland, he does happen to be where I very much feel
he
as
just,
though
he's just not playing there.
Well. Yeah. And I don't want to say he sucks because I don't think it's that he sucks. It's, are my settings on? Did you give me the thumbs up? I saw the thumbs up bubble. I got so distracted.
Really? Where?
What? There's okay. Side tangent. Apparently Zoom is upgraded to a point to where like, if you do like thumbs up things or whatnot, and somebody can have a setting to where it actually pops a graphic up on the screen. It did it again.
There it is. Yeah. Thumbs up.
That's stupid and annoying as fuck on a video thing. Anyways. Wait,
also hand up. Yep. There it is. Oh, got my hand up. That's funny.
Yeah, for Zoom. You don't need animations for something like that on a video conference. You know what lets me know you're giving a thumbs up? The fact that I saw you give a thumbs up.
Anyways. I'm going to push back on that as somebody who sometimes convenes large video meetings when you have 30 participants. It is actually helpful to see the thing pop up because you cannot see 30 videos at the same time. So
but
really quick.
Anyways, but for DeAndre, he doesn't suck. He's not playing up to his expectation level, and that does some of that
career
does come
low
from
the points, career low shooting, career low in blocks. It's not good.
I feel that it'd be easy to kind of sell him still now that he's kind of shedded that.
How would that be easy? Who wants this dude on max?
He shedded that malcontent thing. He's got a good attitude. I think it's easy to sell because you can kind of say, hey, look, we suck as a team. So it's like he's playing down because we suck, and he's not featured. But if you take him, you have this good team. You need this piece. He can fit in there and he'll elevate. It depends on how good Joe Cronin can have that sell job. But
yeah,
I feel it's easier that he could just blame the team in general as being crappy to get a little bit value out of him.
Maybe, but here's the problem is that like 2 years ago, right? Like he was becoming the kind of
Williams.
What's that?
Fighting with Monty Williams.
That too. But like 2 years ago, 2 years ago, he was becoming the player that people thought that he could be as a number one pick. And at a minimum was becoming like a very important player on a title contending adjacent team. Then last year he had what people thought was a down year. And the problem is that this year he's way worse than that. Like that's the problem is that like his effective field goal percentage for his career is 59.5%. Do you want to guess what it is for this year? And so, by the way, 2 years ago, it was 64% effective field goal percentage. Do you know what it is this year?
What was last year again? Repeat that.
So, okay. His career effective field goal percentage is 59.5%. Okay.
All right.
2 years ago, it was 64%. Last year that everyone thought it was going to like a down year, it was 59%. And what is it for this year?
We go 44%.
Oh, okay. That'd be way too far. 53% effective field goal percentage.
Sorry, I went for the extreme. I thought he absolutely sucked, but all right.
Basketball. Shooting 54% as someone who does not take threes is awful. That's really bad. And it's very different from, again, 2 years ago where he was shooting 64%. So like
he's also stretched outside the paint way too fucking often.
Yes. And look again, like I'm like Chauncey Billups is a coach like Chauncey Billups. You have this guy who has played at an all-star level. And this is the kind of production you're getting out of him. Fucking really. I do feel like that narrative has been lost and people just say, well, it's all on DeAndre Ayton. I'm not so sure about that. Like you failing to utilize a player who, again, was an impact player in the finals not that long ago. That's a little bit on the coach. But like, anyway, the Blazers, look, they're stuck. They're stuck with DeAndre Ayton. They're not going to move him. No one wants him. And the cost for the Blazers to get off of that contract is the opposite of what they should be doing for their team building.
Well, can they sweeten the pot by giving somebody Anthony Simons to take him?
That would be really terrifying to like have Anthony Simons be the thing that sweetens the pot to get rid of DeAndre Ayton. What a disappointment that would be. So look, they're stuck.
I'll drive them all to the airport.
I mean, this has become a different topic now, but now just thinking like, I mean, if the Blazers are stuck with DeAndre Ayton, like how are they going to, I mean, to our point about you want players around Scoot and Shaden who help them develop. If DeAndre Ayton is not the kind of center who, when playing with those guys, like helps them develop and the Blazers are stuck with him, what does that mean for the next several years? Like, does that not stunt your development? Like, that's not great.
I think he's acceptable because it's not a directly, it's not a directly impactful position to the guards if their center isn't, you know, all-star level.
He doesn't have to be all-star level, but like, I mean,
he's a serviceable center, but he's paid like an all-star level. I think he's better than Nurk.
This year his shooting is so bad. I'm trying to look up now Yusuf Nurkic, but like his shooting is so bad. He's like, it's feeling like he's a little bit below serviceable. Oof. Do not look at Yusuf Nurkic. His shooting percentages this
year. Told you he's better than Nurk.
Oh my goodness. So
and that's a team with Book and KD.
Yeah, that's not great. Okay. Well, so what else do we got for today? Look, I mean, we need to get back in the rhythm of recording. I'm glad that we jumped on. Anything else that we just like need to hit on before we go?
Not that I can think of. I think we've covered most of it. I mean, if I can go on a small soapbox, I like to just to let anybody know who listens, who then also follows on Twitter. For one, you can tell how interested I am in the Blazers because all of my shit is political rambling at this point. I just throw a bunch of crap at the wall. But anyways, for anyone that I egg on about any of their Chauncey Billups things, I just love the humor of it. It's why I pop on and I'm like, oh, he should coach him to turn the ball over glass. I'm doing nothing but just poking with a stick. It's how Brandon is with the Heat fans. He just finds him, he pokes him with a stick.
Oh boy.
I do a lot better of walking away from it than you do. You stay in the thread and engage with them. But
I say it all in jest and
everybody's allowed to have their opinions. My opinion is that Chauncey will be here through the end of the year. I don't think he's that good of a coach. But we're stuck with him and bitching about him does absolutely no good. I don't think he's destroying the psyche of the team, but
I'm not sure bitching about him does no good. I think that there are enough examples where NBA teams are taking cues from the people who pay them money to show up to games.
Correct. Like, and they're not owned by Jody Allen and run in the closet by Bert Cold. So
I remember now the last podcast, I made the argument that it would be a wise financial decision to move on from Chauncey Billups because he's not paid very much and because he's harming the value of the team because the development of the players is being harmed. So anyway, but like leaving that aside, really quick on Heat fans, y'all really thought that Terry Rozier was going to pull you into title contention? I actually really like Jimmy Butler.
This is all Brandon Goldner. Leave me alone.
I like Jimmy Butler. I like Eric Spoelstra. I mostly like the Heat in general, to be honest. I really don't like their fans. I really don't like their reporters. And like, I think it's Jimmy Butler's 34. He's 34 years old. He's probably played his best basketball already. And instead of getting someone like Damian Lillard, you get Terry Rozier, and you think that's maximizing your championship window. The Miami Heat have very clearly chosen we want to be okay a couple years from now over we want to be great right now. That's the choice they made. And I hope that Miami Heat fans can deal with it. And if you want to deal with it on Twitter, you always can. I'm at GoldnerPDX. He is at the Whitty. Did you have anything else? Sorry.
No, we'll end on here.
I don't know why I ended with that, but that's what we're doing.
Great ending. And again, that is all him. Don't even need my Twitter handle. I have nothing to do with this.
At the Witty Ryan. You can also find our Twitter, which I need to use more, at Like the Blazers or at WeLikeTheBlazers.com. That's it. We'll be back at some point in the not too distant future, maybe right before the trade deadline. I am Brandon. That is Ryan. We appreciate you all. And until then, go Blazers.
Go Blazers.